Thank you for coming. Thanks for updates. Let me start off with an example of the opposite. Let me give you an example of unsafe software updates. This example involves HTTP, which is a web server, a simple query asynchronous web server used by a number of large projects, including Wikimedia. What happened in March 2009 is that developers of HTTP introduced a patch into HTTP tech functionality. HTTP tags can be seen as fingerprints for HTTP packets. Internally, they are used for a number of purposes, such as caching or compression. The original algorithm for calculating HTTP tags is shown here, and it was incorrect. The upper bound in this four cycle was 1 by 1. So what they did is they just fixed that. The problem is that this patch introduced a different bug, which remained undetected for around 12 months, and it was only diagnosed in 2010 in March. And fix and run further down the line. Problem is, as I've said, tags are being used in different places. And one of these places is the compression module. What users can do, they can disable support for HTTP tags in the configuration for the server, and it turned out that they often do. But even when they do, the compression module will still try to use tags. And in that case, the value used here will be 0. So with this new introduced patch, this value here will unfold to a very large value, and then the value of the site will trigger SIGFOLD, killing the whole server whenever client sends a request asking for compression. The fix for this bug is very simple, just adding an extra check here. But as a consequence, users of HTTP have to make a choice. Either they will stick to this old version which predated this patch, or they will update to the new version, but then it became potentially vulnerable to this new introduced vulnerability. Last year, in Hotswap 2012, we introduced what we call the multi-version update software approach, which we believe should address these issues. The idea behind this approach is very simple. Instead of running the old version on the new version and forcing the user to make a choice, we will allow users to run both versions side by side using the abundance of resources provided by new Hadoop platforms. And we will synchronize the execution of two versions, always use the output of correct executing version at any given time, and make this completely transparent to the user. Today, what I'd like to, present is an actual implementation of this approach. So, how does this system work? Let's take two versions of that HTTP, one which predated the HTTP tag patch, one which already contains this patch. At every single system call, we will check whether each version is running side by side, perform the same system call. If they do, we'll continue with the execution. Now, we receive an incoming packet from the user requesting compression. Before we have this request to both versions, we will take a checkpoint. Now, the old version will execute the original code, will succeed. So the new version will execute the new version, the patched improved version of HTTP, and it will crash. What we can do at this point is we can simply discard this crashing version, continue with the old version, because this is transparent. It's still better than having no version at all. But what might happen at some point in the future is that what if the old version crashes as well? In that case, we'll be left with no version at all. So what we are going to do in our approach is we go one step further and we will try to proactively recover the crashing version. The way we do so is we will go back to the last known checkpoint and we will restart the application from this checkpoint. But before we restart its execution, we will replace the code of this crashing version of this restart, which we restarted from the last known checkpoint, and we'll replace its code with the code of the other version. At this point, we'll restart the execution of this modified, this hybrid version, which will succeed, because now we'll be executing the code of the old version, and once we hit the next synchronization point, the next system call, we will revert back to the original source code and continue on with the execution. Now, as you can imagine, now we are making a lot of assumptions, and I think it's really good to cover some of those. So, first of all, we only consider recovery to be successful if both versions exhibit the same behavior after recovery. If not, what we'll do, we'll simply discard crashing version and continue with the correct executing one. We also assume a small backpropagation distance. What this means is the application performs some operation and this operation results in a crash very, very later on. We cannot really handle these type of issues using this approach. And we also assume that the crashes are the only differences between the two versions. If so, we'll always use the non-crashing, the correct executing version as an oracle to distinguish the correct from the incorrect behavior. Now, as you've seen, we are using system calls as a way to synchronize the execution of the versions. And one of the obvious questions is this the right level of abstraction for synchronization between two applications running side by side? And because we are scientists, we're asking the same thing, and we wanted to see some data. Now, there is a whole spectrum of approaches. Our approach, we believe, synchronization of system calls is somewhere in the middle. On one side of the spectrum, you can perform something like total synchronization, where you run all instructions in lockstep, or synchronize, let's say, the little function calls. On the other side, you can also synchronize the execution only level of inputs and outputs. So if input versions with the same output, set the same inputs, and then you compare outputs, but that's where it goes away. We believe that system calls are the right level of abstraction. They can be seen from many different viewpoints. So one is that system calls, they are simply protocol for the application to communicate with the operating system. But we treat system calls in a slightly different way. We see system calls as a way to observe the external behavior of the application. What does this mean is that the application internally can perform whatever it wants, but as long as the externally observable behavior is correct, we don't really care. This is shown here. We have two different implementations of Fibonacci algorithm, and each of those versions use slightly different algorithm to compute those numbers. But if we execute this code, and if you look at the system call traces, which we obtained using S-trace, you will see that the system call traces will be exactly the same, because the algorithm is correct. And this is the fact we are relying on in our implementation. Now, this is a very simple, naive example, so the question is whether this actually holds in practice. So what we did is we took 164 revisions of LiveHDPD, which accounts for roughly 1 year of development. We compiled each version, we run each version using the standard regression test suite, and we trace system calls performed by each version, and then we correlated those traces between versions, and we also correlated differences with the this. And interestingly enough, it turned out that in 95% of revisions, there were no changes at all in the system call behavior. And those changes all happened in 7 cases, and in 6 of them, those changes were very small. Usually there were like 1 or 2 extra system calls, typically come from extra checks, just system calls like APID or syscon. The only major change is this one that developers of LiveHDPD introduced support for ST-Linux. So this is encouraging because it means that even the source code is developing between each revision, behavior we can observe when looking at system calls changes very sporadically. So we went on and we implemented a system which relies on this behavior. The system is called MX. This is the overall architecture of the system. Targets Linux-based operating systems. It allows you to run multi-version applications side-by-side with normal applications. It's an opt-in, you can decide when you want to use it. It's completely transparent both with respect to the operating system and to the user. So the multi-version application looks like any other application. The system is composed of 3 main components, the static analysis part, the system going to position, and we support both particular 64-bit systems. As I said, it's completely transparent. It doesn't require any additional input from the user, and it runs 2 versions with small differences in behavior. So whenever I'm talking about versions here, what I usually mean are either revisions in version control system or minor releases. We are not looking at major releases at this point. And the focus of MX are crashes and failure recovery. So now let me go through each of those modules in a bit more detail. First of all, it's the monitor, which is responsible for executing two versions side by side, intercepting system calls, which is done using PJ's interface. It semantically compares system call arguments. So whether when there are arguments passed using pointers, we don't compare those pointers, but we actually compare values stored in those pointers, which allows us to handle techniques such as address space randomization. And it also provides environment virtualization, which means that whenever the application uses file descriptors or sockets or process handles, those individual versions are not really using real file descriptors or real sockets. Instead, they are using virtual ones. And whenever they perform an operation with virtual descriptors, the monitor will perform the operation on behalf and then pass in the value back to those individual versions. The second part is the execution evaluator, which is responsible for hot code fetching and code recovery. It implements the checkpointing, which is internally using closed system call to benefit from the copy and write mechanism. It also performs runtime stack rewriting and it provides implementation breakpoints. I will show you why we need that in a second. And the last module is the static analyzer, which is responsible for creating mappings between versions. So first it extracts all function symbols from both binaries, then it performs disassembly for each function symbol, and lastly it will reconstruct the call graph for each of those functions and try to mesh those functions between two versions. The reason why we need all this is an example where we have a snippet of instruction code in two versions, and because those are two different versions, it's more likely that the binary layout of those two versions will be slightly different. So what this means is, at runtime, during file recovery, when we replace the code of one version with the code of the other version, all the information being stored on the execution state and in registers will become similarly valid. So what we need to do now, at this point, is we need to go over these and we can fix them. But on its own, this is not enough because applications internally can be also using function pointers. And in order to handle those, we will dynamically inject breakpoints into this patched version to force the execution back to the correct address when we intercept invocation to the original function using this function pointer here. As you can imagine, this approach might be more suitable to some type of changes more than the others. So first of all, we are mostly looking at changes which don't really affect the memory layout, which is very common for things like refactorings or security patches. We are not really looking at feature patches. These are out of the scope. Second, it's quite useful for applications which provide some common synchronization points, such as servers, which are typically structured around some main dispatch loop. And last, obviously, this approach will introduce some additional overhead, so it's more suitable to applications where reliability is more important than performance. So what we did is we took MX, we tried it on a bunch of different applications. One of them is LatHDPD, you've already seen that. Another one is Redis, which is an in-memory NoSQL database. Here's an example of one of the patches. This is the question of refactoring, and normally refactoring shouldn't really change the behavior. They should only change the structure of the code. Unfortunately, it wasn't really the case here, because while changing the structure of the code, developers forgot to include this return statement. So now, when you execute AWGET command in the new version of Redis, this missing return will trigger a segfault, which will kill the whole server. And because Redis is an in-memory database, at this point you will lose all the state you have. Again, when using MX, we are able to survive this bug and continue with the execution completely transparently without any interruption to service. To summarize, all the applications we drive MX on are divided into two categories. One of them are interactive applications. So in particular, we took all the applications in CoreRetail suit. As for server applications, we drive two bugs in LatHDPD and one in Redis. One of the interesting factors we looked at is the time spent. So I said, in MX, we are looking at versions which are closely together. The question is how close or more how far apart those versions can be. So what we did is actually we looked at real bugs and we tried them. And it's interesting that this time span is very often correlated to the maturity of the project. So in case of Coritos, which are very old, very mature, there are almost no new features being introduced there, time span of versions we can run MX is typically the order of years. For example, here is 4 years in case of Maker. In case of Lightdash TPD, which is slightly less mature, it's been only around for about 10 years, it's in the order of months, and in case of Redis, which is very young, it's still being developed very aggressively, it's only in the order of days. The second interesting factor about the development is performance. So, as you know, we are running two versions side by side, but our assumption is if we have enough cores, enough idle cores, and if we can use different cores to run different versions, the overhead should be relatively low. And this is relatively true at least when we've used the spec CPU to see how MX will perform on CPU bounded applications. So in this case, the average overhead was 18%, which we believe is reasonable. But we also wanted to see how MX will behave when we try other class of applications, such as IO-bounded applications. So again, we took all those applications you've already seen before. In case of QueryTales, we only consider cases when these applications are used in interpreted fashion through shell, not for batch processing. And particularly, we looked at the size of the process using these utilities within 100 milliseconds, which is typically the limit where a user can really see the slowdown or perceive the slowdown. In the case of Maker, we can create over 150 nested directories, which would lead us perfectly fine. In case of server applications, we tried two different scenarios. One of them is when both client and server is on the same network. The other scenario is when they are on two different networks. In case of the local, both network scenario, the overhead is relatively high. In case of the distant networks, the overhead is largely limited by latency, and it's almost negligible. We believe that in case of Lightdash TPD, the second scenario is more likely in the real world, because typically you don't really run server and client on the same network, except for debugging. In case of Redis, it's more likely, but it's worth pointing out that Redis is almost 100% idle-bounded application. So this overhead represents, to some extent, the worst-case scenario for MX. But nevertheless, this is something we would like to improve on in the future. And there are a number of ways to do so. We started implementing them in a new system, which we call MX, which stands for GeoMX. And the two things we are looking into are improving performance overhead, and the second improvement are tolerances to system called divergencies. So we'll just go over briefly over those because this is really a work in progress. As for performance overhead, I've said the MX uses Speedrace, which is very easy to use, but it has many subtleties, and one of them is the performance overhead. So this is a snippet of system code basis you observe when running queries. Normally, you would see only one system call, apart from any other suite. But when we throw in MX into the mix, now this becomes more complicated. Because before each system call, MX will be notified when the system call is coming in by receiving a signal. And at this point, MX has to check the registers before the system call is being executed. Then it has to replace the system call, notify it, by replacing the original system call with the VID and restart the execution. Then MX will perform a system call on behalf of the application. And after executing the system call, we have to do the same dance again. And we also have to write in the return value back, the content of the buffer. So as you can see, just in terms of number of system calls, the overhead is roughly 7x. And we cannot really reduce that while using VRays. So that's why in case of NX, we went for a completely different approach. Another big issue is that because these two applications live in different memory address spaces, all of these jumps will also trigger context switches, which are also very expensive. So in case of NX, what we do is we do binary writing. But we don't do full binary writing, we are only rewriting system instructions. So here, if you take a look at the instruction code, Redis, whatever it wants to invoke read, in fact it will call it GDC, which performs the system call itself. What NX does, it will simply replace its original code with a jump to our common system call entry table, and then here we will check whether this is a system call we are interested in, and if so, we will handle it accordingly. And since NX runs in the same address space, this adds virtually no overhead at all. It's just an extra jump and further to processing here. So the overhead is really completely non-negligible, which is a massive improvement over MX. The second thing we would like to improve on are the ability to handle a system called divergency. So as I already showed, in case of like this should be in the study, we've seen that even if there are changes, those changes are very small, like one system call introduced by those extra checks, such as get PID or syscon system calls. But in MX, we can really handle those, because in MX, we run two versions side by side in lockstep. If one version executes a system call, the other version has to do the same, because in MX, we don't really see into the future. So MX is really up on this side of the spectrum when we use synchronization and every single system call. On the other side of the spectrum, we have techniques like return and replay. When we take one version, we would run it from the beginning to the end, we will record it on execution, and then we can take this log and replay it in a different version. There are a few problems there. First of all, the size of this log is potentially unbounded, which can be an issue for long-running applications. And second, if it's a long-running application, if the application crashes and you want to replay its log in a different application, this can take a very long time. To address those issues of recon replay, in X, we are aiming for something we call even streaming, which is in between the two approaches. So the way it works is, in X, we also have an even log, same as in record replay systems, but in X, we are still using this notion of multi-version execution. So we are actually running two versions side by side. But they are completely unsynchronized, unlike in the case of MX. So we have one leader, she's running, it's not waiting for anybody, and it's just producing a stream of events. And then we have a follower, which is running somewhere behind, and it's replaying all those events, as in the case of recurring event systems. But those two versions are still running in parallel. Now, one advantage is that now we are not restricted to two versions. We can run as many versions as we want. Another advantage is that, well, we can also use a different failure recovery mechanism, not just the checkpointing phase. So if the original crashes, the other followers can do voting and can decide which version should become the new leader, and we can immediately continue executing from that version on. And the one big advantage of this approach is that because these followers are already seen in the future, they know what events are coming in from the leader. They can do, for example, coalescing. So if they see that there is an extra system call, which was only performed by one of these newer older versions, they can skip those or execute those extra system calls if needed, if those system calls doesn't have any special side effects, like here. So that's what we already have, but we would like to add even more. One type of improvement we would like to add in an X is support for more complex code changes. To handle those, we would need support for infrastructure inference. We would also like to try to do some simple form of control flow graph isomorphism. And to support changes into function definitions, we would need full call stack reconstructions. At this point, what we do is only call stack rewriting. We cannot really reconstruct full stack. So if the function signature is changes between two versions, we can really handle that at the moment in MX. Another improvement would be a support for non-crashing type of divergencies, issues like infinite loops and DevOps, which we believe will be also very easy to handle by using the multi-version of execution concept. So to summarize, what I presented is, I believe, a novel approach for improving reliability of updates, which is based on multi-version execution, and the implementation, in case of MX, can already survive crash packs in real applications at reasonable overhead, but it also opens up many opportunities for future work. I've already shown some of them, improvements such as better performance overhead, tolerance to system call divergencies, but also support for more complex code changes and other type of divergencies. Thank you.
Well, if one version crashes, why shouldn't all the other versions crash as well?
Well, that's our assumption that the synchronous behavior which caused the crash is introduced in this patch. I mean, obviously, if you have few versions which contain the same issue, it might happen that all of them crash and because we cannot really help. So then there's another big issue or challenge is the deployment strategy. How many versions do you keep around? Which versions to make sure that this doesn't happen? But that's would say orthogonal problems. I'm aware of some research looking into these problems, and I don't think it's a trivial thing to do, but it's really orthogonal to what we are doing.
And it's also a question how much you trust the updates and how much additional performance you're willing to spend to get to keep the additional versions or the older versions or newer versions running.
That's true. So something we've been envisioning for NX, for example, is to what you can do is because typically there's a bug. Again, we would have to prove that, but it might happen that this bug will manifest itself very early on after you update. So for a little while, in case of NX, where we can dynamically scale the number of versions we have around, for most of the time we can only run one version. But when the updates come in, we can throw in multiple versions, run them for a while, and if the new version turns out to be working correctly, we can throw out those old versions again.
Well, this will not hold for security bugs, right? They will only manifest themselves when they're exploited.
Yeah, that's. I guess it really depends on the scenario you are targeting. Yeah.
Well, I didn't understand your objection to synchronizing at input-output. That's a classic voting technique that people have used for 40 years.
I'm not really objecting against that. It's just, you can even see system calls as one way to...
So that's, yeah, I mean...
It can be seen as inputs and outputs, only at slightly lower level.
Yeah, but I mean, you had a slide where you said there was a range of things, and you skipped, you just sort of casually threw that option off without an explanation.
This might be worth more explanation. There was, for example, one implementation which uses input-output synchronization strategy. When they run multiple browsers side by side, and then they feed the same input to all the browsers, and then see whether you get the same DOM feed out. But it's assumed that you understand the format used. Which is the case in case of web browsers. It's obviously the case because HTTP is a standard and DOM is a standard as well. So you can implement that and you can target them. But in our case, we are not really assuming any input format. So if you see system calls as an input-output format between the application and operating system, then yes, you can classify it like that.
Yeah, so I mean, there are different levels of...
It's just a different view.
Yeah.
So you're looking at this as a they want to do like one process per tab, that sort of sounds like similar to what you've got coming up here, where you have multiple processes and you might update different tabs at different times. Is that sort of like one practical application of this?
We haven't really been looking at that, but I can imagine, yeah.
Regarding overhead, are you aware of the SecCon framework?
Yes. Well, so the binary binding in NX is actually based on SecCon sandbox code.
Okay. I see.
Other questions? All right, so thank you.
Thank you.